Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And I get some MJ? Oh, hell yeah, on a Friday. Hold on, let me just finish. I got to text this real quick to my brother and sister-in-law. There's a new Dungeon Crawler Carl Overlord that got cast. I have to send that tweet to them.
Okay.
They didn't know that. Now I do. Welcome back. Grant Danny here on the Fan. Tobes in for GP. So what we're doing right now, calling some balls and strikes here. That's what we try to do. So we've talked a little behind the scenes in general for Grant and I, and Tobes on will speak for you, but I think you may be cut from the same cloth. I think you're doing the gig right if you find yourself arguing against both sides.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean every issue you're going to be straight down the middle. That's not really what I mean. If you're one of those guys, it's like they're going to go 1-16. Quinn's going to get fired in week 4. They stink. No, I think you're wrong. If you're 14-3, you know, Daniel sets every positive offensive record, and they're going to be the greatest team since the 91 Redskins. I think you might be wrong about that, too.
Yeah.
So you always kind of find yourself arguing against extremes on kind of any side. I think generally that's a good sign if nobody loves you, right? It's about a compromise or a business deal. A good one is when everybody leaves kind of gruntled, right? When Nobody's happy. So what we're doing here is calling balls and strikes. National media is pretty low on this Washington club. Entering week 2 of the preseason, from what they've seen based on last year, some of the stuff I think they're a little bit over the top on, but you kind of compiled the list.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been interesting. We just talked about Nick Shook is down on Dan Quinn, saying it's a prove-it year. I think that's correct versus, you know, the Jaden thing or the offensive line. Like, I think it's just interesting when you look. We were talking about this before the show. ESPN put out a position ranking of all the different units across the National Football League, and the Commanders only found themselves outside of or above the top 20 in two different position groups, quarterback and linebacker. If that doesn't tell you how the consensus around this team from the national media is quite low, I don't know what else to tell you. Now, are they 100% correct? I don't necessarily think so. I think they're going to be a little bit better. The way that you read about them at times, Danny, it's like, oh, this is going to be another 5-win season. I think this team is better than that. But how much better? Is it the same that, you know, the fan that tweets at us and says that they're going to win 12 games, or is it more in that 8-9-ish range? So I think it's interesting just reading the various things and seeing if we agree or not.
Love it. So, Darius, you're our moderator for this. We've already gone through a couple. You have a few more there in the holster. Have at it.
All right. The next one that we got is from Sports Illustrated. Peter Dewey wrote an article where he ranked every team's Super Bowl odds. He has the Commanders 22nd with plus 6,000 odds to win the Super Bowl. His excerpt will go on to say Washington went from the NFC title game to missing the playoffs last season, and now it has the fourth toughest schedule in the NFL in 2026.
I agree with this. This is my summary. As we talk about this all the time, a lot of it is out of your control. You can be a better team. I mean, for example, we've talked about Detroit, their opponent tomorrow. Did you know Detroit had a better point differential last year than they did two seasons ago when they won, I think, 14 games? You know that? I mean, it's not something you'd consider. We thought, Oh, what a disappointment last year. They were just okay. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. But yeah, they had a better point differential in 2025 than they did in 23 when they won 12 games, right? So part of that was, you know, they were maybe more fortunate a couple years ago or whatever. But you can be a better team and not end up with a better record. That's based on a million things. Do you get to play a bunch of backup quarterbacks? When you play a certain team, are they banged up? Are they coming off a huge rest disadvantage, travel, et cetera? And we don't know right now, but on paper, right now, this minute, I cannot stop talking about this schedule. And I know a lot of Washington fans don't want to hear it because they're like, that's soft. You got to beat everybody anyway. It doesn't matter. What matters when you're not great? I wouldn't care if I was Buffalo what their schedule is. That's a matter of if they win in 13, 12, 11. No one wants to see them come postseason time. Washington hasn't graduated to that, in my view. So I think the East is really good. I think the Giants are a lot better. Not good yet. They're not ready for primetime, but they're ready to be a pain in your butt. I think Dallas will be much improved. And I think Philadelphia is too good an organization right now with the best GM in the sport and Howie Roseman to falter further than an 11-win season, which has been their down years over the last four. I think that's just to begin the conversation before you start playing Seattle and some of these other really good teams. So that's my narrative. I don't like their chances for that reason.
Yeah, no, and you've been consistent on that throughout the entire process. Yeah. And I would say that I'm a little less on your side in that because every single schedule in the National Football League is hard because you're playing in the National Football League. Now, obviously, some are going to be harder than others. Like, you look at the beginning of Washington's schedule, there isn't a cupcake before the bye week. Philly's hard. Dallas is hard. Both of those on the road. Seattle at home. That's the defending Super Bowl champs. Indianapolis would be a little bit easier, but they were a good team last season. And by the way, you're traveling to London. And then you've got the Giants, who are always tough to play, even though they might not be great. They're in your division. They know you well. That's going to be a tough one. And then you got San Francisco before the bye week. But then you look after the bye week, and they're still tough games, but you get down, there's a stretch where it's Cincinnati, who's a tough team, but I think beatable. Arizona's beatable. Tennessee's beatable, right? So they've got games that they can win. I think it just means that your margin for error is you cannot lose the winnable games. And so I understand that, but to me, every single schedule in the National Football League, there's no such thing as a cakewalk unless you feel like the NFC South, all four teams really suck, right? So to me, it matters, but I think it's getting overblown just a hair because of the fact that Philadelphia is beatable. They are in your division. This team has played them well when they were bad, right? So talking about Washington, when they were bad, they played Philly hard. So I don't know. To me, every schedule in the NFL is of varying difficulty, and that's also based off of last year's strength of schedule stuff, right? Or the way that they played last season. Who's to say one team on here that sucked doesn't have a great season and one team that was great doesn't fall back to the pack? So I don't put as much weight into that one, but I fully understand why some people feel the way that they do.
Last one I got for you, friend of the program, Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports. He was actually a bit nicer to us. He put us 18th in the power rankings for 2026 to start the season. He does go on to say, though, it's fair to wonder if the Commanders have done enough to support Jaden Daniels. Both coordinators will be calling plays for the first time in the NFL. That's a risk for Dan Quinn, who will be on the hot seat if the Commanders don't contend for a playoff berth again. The offense is practically the same lukewarm cast that it was last season, which has also been an issue with Stroud's development in Houston.
So let's tackle these one by one, Danny.
Okay.
So we'll start with the first one. It's fair to wonder if the Commanders have done enough to support Daniels. So I think this was completely valid. I think we both were banging the drum, you more so than me, but I think we were both banging this drum before they signed Stephon Diggs. And now since they've signed Stephon Diggs, who I view as like a legitimate 1A, 1B now with Terry McLaurin, I'm fine with what they have around him. Maybe not on the offensive line, which we've already talked about, and maybe that wants to, you know, if you consider that part of it, then I fully understand that. But I think for Jaden, I think the weapons now are ample enough that I actually really believe in Antonio Williams. And now that he's not depended on to try to be the number two receiver, I think he's going to be, you know, someone that you can depend on, and he'll grow maybe not as much as a rookie, but I think he's going to be someone that's going to be really helpful for this offense. I actually like their weapons quite a bit right now with where they're at.
All right. So going through, as you said, each point, I still don't think it's enough. Now, skill position-wise, Stephon Diggs changes everything to me. Because now when you start to look at overall the totality of the offense, you had a pass-catching running back in Rashad White, role TBD. Chigakonkwo, a more dynamic tight end. Zach Ertz was valuable, certainly, as a catch-and-fall guy, but he was, you know, box out and going to get you that 4.5 when you needed 4. But Okonkwo should be more dynamic. I'm bullish on that signing. Diggs changes the dynamic to me. Instead of going, yeah, maybe they'll find another Noah Brown off the scrap heap, it's we got a 1,000-yard guy coming off a down year, right? This is just, as you said, it's sort of a different animal. But to me, it's the offensive line. Even with Tunsil, this is I know I'm saying the same thing. I'm a broken record. This is year 3 of a build. If this is what it looked like in year 1, where you inherited a bunch of bad contracts and a bunch of stupid signings from Bavaria and company, you'd go, all right, I get it. You're sort of stuck here. We'll do the best we can. You're not. This is year 3, and you've had so much cap space each of the last 3 seasons. I just can't believe it. I cannot believe you can go to bed at night if you're Peters, Newmark, and Sosna and all the guys going, we have not assembled a top 12, top 15 offensive line for this kid who's been hurt a million times. How could you go to bed at night? Wouldn't you be panicked? Wouldn't you be freaking out every second under the sun? going, oh my God, with rubbing your forehead like our boss does when I miss a read or Darius goes to break early. Like, how could you possibly go to bed and relax? It, like, we had, oh, we're not 32nd, we're 25th. Oh, okay, great. I'll get the parade stuff ready. How could this be the case? Again, I understand you can't do everything at once. Three off seasons now, three drafts now. Come on, man. Come on. Way less Johnny Newton in my draft. Way more offensive linemen in my draft. Way less, Luke McCaffrey in round three. Way more linemen that turned into something or didn't. My point is you had chances and you didn't get it done. I understand not everybody's going to sign here. I understand swinging and missing a free agent. I understand the process. I get it. I'm not a crazy person. I just know that the net, the totality here is the third year of this regime having multiple off-seasons draft, ways that you're acquiring players, and it's...
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
At best, with Tunsil, just okay. I just find that so unacceptable.
Well, so I want to double click on that, because back to what we read a little bit earlier about the PFF line ranking, he said that if they had Tunsil, they would have been just inside the top 20. So let's assume that's like 19 or something like that. You think that it should still be lower than that if they had Tunsil? Because to me...
It's around there, 19 to 22. Okay. You can't complain.
Because to me, when I look at it, if they had Tunsil, because you can't plan for him to be gone. And I actually think Coleman fills in well. If you had Tunsil, let's put Tunsil there for now. Mm-hmm. Tunsil, Chris Paul, Nick Allegretti, Sam Cosmi, Josh Connerly. I actually like that O-line. The problem is, now you've got Coleman sliding in at left tackle. I didn't like the center position. I have never liked the way that they went about addressing that. I understand Connerly is probably not great right now. I still believe in the upside, and he's playing right tackle. The issue I think you run into now where they're at is, before, I never had to help Laremy Tunsil. I could always help Josh Connerly because of that. Now, I probably have to help both tackles, which in turn makes Chris Paul a little more vulnerable, and I don't believe in the center at all still, regardless of whether it's Nick Allegretti or not. So I can understand where it gets lower, but you were lower even when they had Tunsil.
Yeah, so and here's the distinction. I still like Connerly, even with all the negative that's swirling around, right? But I understand the point. If you're writing, you're going, just because you believe in something happening, eventually it has not happened yet.
Yeah.
Right? Where if you're going, you're telling me, y'all wait and see, wait till Luke McCaffrey breaks out. Maybe. I'd love to not have to worry about that. Now give me Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
Who's coming off 80 catches in a grand. And who's when he playing 50% of snaps. If he goes back to his normal rate of snaps, that's, 85 catches, 1,100 yards, and way better than anything that they had. I understand at some point you got to go with the unproven. They had to do it in Kansas City, and they're still struggling to find consistent pass catchers, right? Because the quarterback makes $1 billion. That's not the case here. You don't have to make the tough choices yet. And the framing that has driven me crazy this offseason was, well, they had to help the defense. Uh-huh. You know what's so much fun about having tons of cap space because you have a quarterback on a rookie deal is you're not limited to one decision. You're not limited to one thing. You can improve everything. You absolutely can. And they've had three offseasons to do it with a star quarterback on a rookie deal. You look at the Chicago Bears, for example. Now, it didn't work out this way. They surrounded Caleb Williams with all the receiving talent in the world. Veterans, young players, drafted guys early, traded things away to make sure they had a cadre of excellent receivers for him, including veterans, guys that could do more with less, etc. Turns out they swung and missed on the offensive line. Well, now look at their offensive line rankings. You don't have to scan down too far. You don't have to give yourself carpal tunnel to find where Chicago is. They're towards the top of everybody's rankings. Great skill guys, great offensive mind, and an excellent offensive line. Ta-da! Is it any wonder his production improved last year? It's not some weird mystery. We always do this with quarterbacks, where, again, they're going to be guys that are going to be busts no matter what, Tobes. But you go to some place that needs saving, like you throw poor Cam Ward to the Wolves in Tennessee, and it's like, yeah, we got kind of a Rube offensive mind, not much talent around him, very little receivers. Anyway, let's see what happens. Wouldn't you know, he struggled a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, all the guys that we think of as punchlines over the years, from, Jamarcus Russell to Akili Smith to Tim Couch to David Carr, all these guys are like, yep, no, funny, they stunk. They all went to terrible orgs, had terrible experiences, had no talent around them, were basically thrown into the deep end. and somehow it didn't work out? How could you ever do anything other than surround a young rookie quarterback with everything that you possibly could to maximize and protect? Because that position is so damned hard when everything's perfect. And once they've achieved their full power, once they're Thanos with the glove that Eitri made for him out of, remember, because he said he would spare all the dwarves, mm-hmm. With the, you know, right there by the power of the star.
Of course.
I'm talking about.
Yeah,
and he didn't keep his word, which is kind of BS, because usually Thanos keeps his word. I thought it was a little bit of a plot hole, if I'm being honest about that, because the whole point of Thanos is, even though he's doing all these terrible things, he's pretty honorable. Right? Like, he says what he's going to do and he does it. Think about all the Avengers that he spared. Could have killed Tony Stark, could have, you know, battered these guys. You know, in Infinity War, for example, Captain America, Cap, if you will.
Yeah, Cap.
Stops his punch. Thanos kind of looks at him like, oh, I didn't know you could get down like that. Then just punches him in the face. Doesn't obliterate him, doesn't tear him in half, doesn't change reality just to end him. He could have. He's an honorable villain, but then he's supposed to be betraying Eitri and just mm-hmm. getting rid of all the dwarves, even after he made him the Infinity Gauntlet. I thought that was a little bit bogus, but we glossed past it because the whole point was that Thor was going to take the power of a son and kind of show that he was full power, active Thor, rehabbing from the setback that happened in Infinity War. But the point is, what was my point? Oh, yeah. Once a quarterback has the Infinity Gauntlet and they're Josh Allen, they're Lamar Jackson, they're Pat Mahomes, they're Joe Burrow, you go, hey, you got to do it with less. You got to carry us. We can't pay everybody, right? Why would you ever ask a rookie quarterback or a quarterback on a rookie deal to do that? Let them get to the point where they get the Infinity Gauntlet. And Washington's gone, you know what, man? We're going to make it harder for you with this build. We're going to do an unproven center, the guy that's played there twice but practiced there some. And that's the plan?
Yeah.
So, anyway, I know I went on a long rant there, but it's really, I just wanted to talk about Infinity War and Endgame again.
Real quick, a couple of the other ones that Frank Schwab brought up, had them 18th in the power ranking, so he was a little bit more bullish than just about everybody else in the national media. I thought this point is really astute. Both coordinators calling plays for the first time in the NFL. I think sometimes, from our side of things, you go, well, you know, they roll out week one, and you're going to face Philadelphia. They're not going to know what they're facing. You face Dallas in week two, they'll have 1 week's worth of film. The defending champ Seattle come in for the home opener, they'll have 2 weeks' worth of film. So that's going to work in Washington's favor, right? Certainly could, Danny. Also, you got two first-time play callers who could be stumbling through it. Now, Durante Jones has done it before, at least at the college level, so I'm a little less worried about him. But I do think there is something to be said for first-time calling plays at any level. For David Blau, you don't just step right in and suddenly be or a genius at
it's
scripting
hard for the best, yeah.
And sequencing and all that sorts of stuff. So I'm interested how long that takes, or if it's something where he's the kid wonder that gets it going right out of the gate, but then as people start to pick up on him, maybe it hits him in the middle of the season. I do think at some point he's got to hit some sort of a cold spell where we're like, all right, he's got to be a little bit better as a play caller.
There has to be some grace given. And again, I just wish they were playing Cleveland and the Jets out of the gate. They're not. They're playing three of the six best teams probably in the whole NFL. Maybe Dallas outside looking in. But fine. Three of the best, 10 best teams in the league probably out of the gate. There's no scheduling directional Michigan here to start things off, yeah. Right? There's no soft landing spot. And the best to do this still take a minute to get a feel for it. It's really hard. And I don't know you have time to kind of figure that out. I think it's such a good point. All right. I know that sounded more negative. Here's the positive. Let's do that. 800-636-1067. What are you more optimistic about? What are you optimistic about, not only, you know, with this preseason, with this team, but for the year? What are you optimistic about? We'll also find out what you're nervous about, but really I want to start with, what are you most optimistic about? It can be a unit. It can be a player. It can be coaches. Whatever it is. Pull up the phones right here on a Friday afternoon on the way home before nobody could drive anywhere because of the Grand Prix that's in town this weekend, right? Give us a call, 800-636-1067. What are you optimistic about for this team this year? Toby, Danny, it's Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.